You're back in the press box with Clay Baker and Ed Graney. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas and call the show 702-364-1100.
Oh, we're back here on a Friday. This is awesome.
Man, it's freaky.
You got to get the Facebook Live fast. Please get the Facebook Live fast. We're about to do something on Facebook Live that... The only thing missing is like a drink from Starkus at this point, but Dr. Caleb Pinniger from Crevetti Orthopedics is here, Crevetti Ortho. Follow them on Twitter. And Dr. Pinniger, welcome back. We've got a lot of athletes to talk about, but let's start with one non-athlete in this room. Our buddy Clay Baker is in dire need of your services and pain. I see that you have brought some kind of shot. Yeah. I believe we will be giving him, hopefully in the spine or some very weird place.
Look how big that thing is. Yeah.
So explain your problems. Well, what's your issue? You can't stand up, for Christ's sake.
I can't get around. Basis. Yeah, and I had like I felt like a lingering muscle pull in my leg. And after a while, when I start looking up, what is wrong? It's not a pulled muscle at all. I have a problem with my IT band. And this is something that has completely restricted my ability to walk anywhere, to even get up out of a bed, to get out of a chair. It's impossible to get around. And at a time when I really need to start working out and, you know, and sweating a little bit, I can't move around at all.
Let's review the IT band, because do we all have one or just you?
All right. Can you tell me
what the hell is the
IT band? Yes.
So your IT stands for iliotibial. So this is basically a long piece of tissue that runs from the crest of your hip. If you put your hands on your hips when you're standing, waiting in line, you feel that bump up on top.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ilium, or the crest of your pelvis. This piece of tissue runs from there all the way down past your knee. And if this gets tight, if it starts to snap and rub over part of the bone of the femur, it can cause you a ton of pain. So I figured, you know, our smartest thing to do was to be to lay a big shot right in front of you.
Yeah. Yes.
So you can stare at this injection all day while we talk. We can,
this is awesome.
We can just let you think about how fun that might be if you earn one of these.
Would you get that injection in the back?
You know, I mean, ideally, you put this where it hurts.
Oh,
but if you want
right
it in his back, we can put it in his back, in his neck. You
know?
Put it right in my eye. Right,
can I give him the shot in his neck?
Yes. Why is Ed trying to, like, start to... Look, leave it alone. And it doesn't go in with that stabbing motion. It comes in softly, you know, kind of like an upward thing.
How did you mess up your IT band? What could you have been doing?
I was hoping you could tell me. I don't really know. I mean, this was... It felt like... when we were, like, sledding and skiing in March, it seemed like I felt a little bit of a pull. But I tried to stretch it out or soak it. But next thing you know, like, the last 10 days... Now it's really, like, taking hold.
Yeah. So people often get soreness over this area, either at the top near kind of the butt on the outside of the hip, or they get this down low at the knee. And so it depends. I mean, we get a lot of people in our office that have, you know, they're waking up from sleeping with this soreness right in the outside of the hip, and they think they got arthritis. But oftentimes it's just swelling over this piece of tissue where it's snapping and you're compressing it all night when you sleep, and... A little cortisone injection can calm that down. That
really?
Plus some stretches, physical therapy. Otherwise, the other group of people that get this, it's down near the knee in runners, people that are doing sprints or a lot of stairs. That band of tissue can kind of snap back and forth over part of the femur. And
seriously, I feel like sometimes where I can't even place my foot down correctly, it almost feels like I have to like relearn how to like just step and plant my left foot, because there's like a weird feeling in the patella tendon where I don't have any like power there. It almost feels like I'm gonna like pop a knee if I'm going to just simply walk out of bed.
I think you might need like four of these.
My God. Between this shot and the bar at home, you should be fine. with a scotch at home and what he's about to do to you with that shot in your neck, you should be okay tomorrow. You should be able to go to the pool with Jackson.
You'll be great.
You're gonna be just fine.
That swimsuit body is around the corner.
There it is, buddy. It's right there in July.
Ever since Dr. Caleb Pinniger came into the studio, he's been laughing and smiling like he cannot wait to go. And, like,
how much
this
can he not wait to jam you with this needle?
2 foot needle. I mean, I don't even know. It's like for elephants.
You'll be fine. Jared and I will be here when you pass out.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Okay, Jared. We can run the show. We got this.
Sure, yeah. No one knows how to run the board, so we don't know what the hell we'll be saying. But
many people is this a common injury? How often do you see this?
Like I said, in the running population, I mean, runners are historically kind of tight. They run a lot. Their muscles are under constant extension and stretch, and over time they can develop a little bit of a tendonitis, and that's along the path of what this injury can be. And so that's why, you know, track athletes, they're in the training room all the time. They're getting worked out, muscles rubbed out, helping with stretch, and otherwise the type of what we call more bursitis up near the hip, It's real common, and okay. and it can be just irritating. It keeps you up all night, keeps you from sleeping. People come in, bags under their eyes, they're miserable, and it can make a big difference. If this is what you need, it can be really pretty life-changing.
See, isn't that nice? He included me with Limp's list of athletes. like that makes me feel
the first time for everything. Yeah. Let's go to real athletes.
Why not?
Shohei Ohtani, the Angel star, grade 2 UCL sprain. So they could return him to the DH. Is a UCL sprain specifically, because I think everyone's going to ask, did they overuse this guy? They played him as a two-way player. It was such a great deal. He's in a pitcher and outfielder. He's a hitter and everything like that. Is it wear and tear, or could I do this to my UCL just by getting up and making the wrong motion with my arm?
No, this is a pitching injury or a traumatic injury, and a person like a wrestler can get this during okay. a specific
You have to do
move.
Something to yourself,
Yeah, this isn't something you just are throwing ball with your kids and you hurt. This is okay. a very, very high intensity rotational injury. So when a person's really cocking back to throw a ball, that's where this is under the most stress. And it's true, a two-way player is at increased risk. So you'll see people that are, you know, they're in the outfield or in the infield, and somebody eyeballs them and says, that guy's got a good arm, let's make him a pitcher. If a person's not trained as a pitcher all the way growing up, their elbow hasn't adapted to that stress yet. And so if you have a guy who has a good arm and you try to convert him to a pitcher, their percentage of becoming a potential UCL injury is higher than yeah. the guys that grow up pitching.
And you've heard stories in the past where teams will be up or down, you know, they'll be up 17-2 or down 7-2. Hey, let's have Jimmy come in from left. We don't want to waste our arms. Well, pitching is so much different than, you know, maybe fielding two balls a game. All of a sudden, this kid's throwing 38, 40 pitches. He could do damage to the arm. The motion's different. He's trying to throw as hard as he can. Mm-hmm. I always wonder why they would ever do that and bring guys in. I get it, because they're trying to save their pen and they're going to lose the game anyway. But I think you're putting that guy at risk to come in and all of a sudden say, hey, be a pitcher here, even if it's for an inning.
Yeah, you can. And hopefully the one inning won't do it. But you're right. If he comes and brings everything he's got,
yeah.
and if his arm's not ready for it, and if he's going to fatigue different than your regular pitcher,
right.
because it's not the type of motion or type of pace he's putting on the ball regularly, yeah, he can hurt himself.
We're speaking with sports injury expert with Crivetti Orthopedics. It's Dr. Caleb Pinneger here with us on the Press Box. We were talking about Shohei Ohtani. Let's talk about workload for a second. In Japan, if you're a pitcher, you are going to do a workload. You are not going to pitch more than once every 5 games. So you have those 5 days of rest, and you don't do anything other than just worrying about pitching. But when they bring Shohei Ohtani over to the United States, they want him to be a two-way player. What kind of workload now, and even though he's a young man, like in his early 20s, but when you have to go and take swings to be competitive, as well as continue to work your elbow, I can see it. This is an extremely large amount of strain. The reason why we haven't seen a two-way player is because of this exactly large workload. No one should have ever expected him to last this long.
Yeah, the double workload is hard. It's and if he's coming back as mostly like a designated hitter, I know that's what they're talking about lately, is right. Can he just hit? And in truth, if he doesn't hurt when he hits, the likelihood of hurting your UCL more while hitting isn't as good. It's a throwing injury. So if he's just going to be a designated hitter, he'd be all right. But if he's out at, you know, infield, and if he's whipping balls across to first base, then you're right. He's still aggravating the UCL while he's trying to rest it.
So you would have to think that this problem is going to continue if you continue to push him to be a two-way player. It's not just this year, but if you try to do this next year, I'm thinking of the Angels and Socha, the manager. Forget the two-way player. You have to go and find one or the other. He can't do both.
I think that's smart, and that's why you don't see your pitchers doing it. Your pitchers are, you rest them to protect them, and that's the purpose of it.
Andrew Luck of the Colts last year had a shoulder injury, chose not to have surgery, missed the entire year, opted out of surgery, saw Tom House. We've heard about Tom House. We've read about Tom House and the philosophy around the rotation of the shoulder and all that they do. When you hear other methods, I mean, I assume some of those other methods are okay. I know we've talked to you guys in terms of, you know, surgery is just one option. There are other things to do. So when you see an NFL player of that level, and obviously throwing the ball is the most important thing he does in life, at least at this point in his life, how do you approach a guy who comes in and says, I just don't want to do surgery, it scares me?
You know, if surgery is what someone... You never need to force somebody to have surgery. That's the most important thing. There are always other options, and most people, if they do need surgery, and if you try the other alternatives, if really surgery is the fix, they often come to grips with that as they see the other things not
working.
Work.
Okay.
Exactly. But if you see a guy like Andrew Luck, who's been evaluated by probably more than 10 different surgeons across the world, he spent some time in the Netherlands, and he's been all over, if people are telling him, hey, I don't think you need surgery, then the answer is elsewhere. And so Tom House, he's worked with so many NFL quarterbacks, and on top of that, he was a pitching coach and a former baseball pitcher himself. Mm-hmm. So he's had an experience with, and he calls himself this rotational athlete evaluator, right? And the truth is he's a throwing expert at this point. Whether you're performing a serve with a tennis ball and it's an overhead arc motion, or whether you're throwing a football, or whether you're throwing a pitch, he's cued into where should your other shoulder be? Where should your toe be? Where should your neck be? And he's evaluated some of these players and found out, hey, look, yeah, your shoulder's hurting, but you're leading with your head, and so it's stretching your trap while you're trying to throw, and it's creating... So he's pointing out to these players what else they need to work on. The shoulder, yes, hurts, but why is the shoulder hurting? And if it's not a surgery problem, I think it's fantastic that he's finding other things these guys can work on to help them fix the true problem by what's contributing to it.
Yeah, Tom House is not a doctor. He's just an old pitcher from the 70s and 80s who's just been able to kind of like take some experience. We've seen him over the years kind of help pitchers make adjustments in their throwing motion by throwing a football instead of a baseball. Is that kind of like a reliance on trying to use different muscles, or is that a psychological thing where you just want to kind of like throw normally, but yet if you have a baseball in your hands, it forces you to throw maybe too harder or put too much pressure on certain points of your fingers?
I think you're catching on to it there at the end. If you're throwing a larger ball, one that has a different weight to it, you cue in to where things feel.
Okay.
So as you throw when you have a smaller ball in your hand, you might not notice where your fingers are positioned as well, and you might not notice how you're ending at the conclusion, because as you rotate your wrist, you don't have that feedback from that type of ball. So you try another type of ball, and you try to say, oh, hey, I do notice when I'm performing this motion, hey, that feels a little different. And as you educate that and practice that, then you convert to the other type of ball. It's all just practice repetition to try to get the feel for when you're in your real situation.
We knew Michael Porter Jr. might slip in the draft when they asked him what teams thought of the medicals, and he said they were, I don't know if they weren't great, but he said they're all okay with it. It was a very non-committal thing in terms of what the teams thought of the medicals. He underwent a pretty, you can tell, a serious operation on his back, and I'm sure they shied away from that. But even as young as he is, it's, I think when people just in general hear back, they get scared. I mean, it's just like kind of one part of the body where, you know, don't get it on the back, don't get it on the back. That's where he got it. So I guess you weren't surprised he slipped. How much could this be reoccurring? How much would you worry if you were a team that it wasn't a knee, but it was his back?
Mm-hmm. In the NBA players, they've kind of evaluated who's had a microdisc, or basically a small surgery to remove part of a herniated disc. And that's what he had a few months back. And over the short course, they're limited compared to their counterparts, the guys that don't underdo this. But if you get about a year or two into this, their results and their ability to play and their level of play should match their peers.
Okay.
So over time, yes, he should be fine. I don't know if we have the great answer for long term. Is his back going to wear out a little quicker? I mean, anybody who has a back surgery has an added risk of future more back surgery.
Right.
And so we'll see how he does in the long term. But really, in a year to two after he's completed all his rehab and completed his return to play and got comfortable with how he's feeling, he shouldn't be restricted compared to the guys who haven't had it.
I think just because of the nature of that surgery, the microdisc surgery that you had explained once, that on a procedure that you had seen or maybe had performed, that they had to actually open up a cavern in and around the spine in order to go and work on that. I mean, it's a very extensive surgery, one in which, would you say that this will open up a more problematic time for, like, I mean, like, a will it open up more surgeries, more injuries down the road, or will it just be one and done? You just do this once, and then after the rehab, maybe after a couple of years, it'll be good as new?
You hope it's one and done. If he had enough trauma to injure one disc, you do worry about the disc above and below. And if you, when they do the surgery, they're very careful to keep all the ligaments intact that they can, and to make a very minimal minimal incision and
there
minimal
is an incision
dissection.
Now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there has to be an incision. I don't know of a way to do this through like a complete
laser. Okay.
Yeah, where they do have laser spine institutes in places that, but you're still leaving with some stitches in your skin.
Okay.
Like you still have a way to get in there.
Okay.
There is some risk that down the road he's going to have to do more to it. But if this was an isolated level, if they pulled out a piece of his disc that was really pinching the nerves, and he's going to stay strong in his core.
Sure.
And if you keep strong, if you keep your muscles limber, flexible, and to protect your core, he should be able to keep it up.
You've talked often to us about ACLs, MCLs, all those ligament sprains. You guys do a ton of them at Curvity Ortho and bring people back from rehab after you do the procedure on them. Carson Wentz, obviously, everyone will be watching this year. They won the Super Bowl without him. One of the reasons they probably haven't traded Nick Foles is because I'm sure they want to see, where is this knee? I mean, you're not going to trade a guy who won the Super Bowl for you if you don't think that knee's coming back. He did it in December. He's saying he'll be ready for the season, which should be September. Will that surprise you, or an athlete of his level could bounce back in 9 months?
That's kind of the early cusp of the majority of your NFL players return to play.
Full go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So at about we look in about a 9 to 12 month range, and there's guys that come back a little earlier, and there are guys that take a little longer. It sounds like he's optimistic. The real keys are going to be, how does his knee respond where he takes the quantity of cuts and tucks and turns and sprints that the game's going to require? Is his knee going to swell a little bit? If the knee's not ready, the big things that you'll notice is he's going to be painful, he's going to be swollen. His ligament this far out should be stable.
Okay.
Now the trick is going to be, what's his endurance and what's his stamina to take those twist turns, and how timid might he be? This is you have a reconstructed limb, you're out there trying to face these huge guys who know it's your weakness. You know, they want to exploit that because they want to win.
Sure.
And so he has to also cope with that mentally, and that's going to be the additional factors that we sometimes don't think about as these guys are returning to the
Well,
play.
Derek Rose blew his out a couple times at least,
that's
if
right.
not both knees.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure we've asked you this, but I always want to repeat the important stuff in terms of the ACLs. Is Carson Wentz now more susceptible, or no? Is that ligament just like I had that I've never blown out the ACL or any of these guys, or is it more susceptible now because you had to rebuild it?
Ironically enough, in a person who's torn, for example, your left ACL, you're more likely to tear your other ACL than the re-tear of the current
okay.
one.
Okay, really?
So he does have a risk of re-tear. It's around like the 5-6% mark over the course of his life. But on the other side, his risk of tearing his other ligament is above 10%. So
what?
It's kind of ironic.
Is that a normal range for everyone, or just a pro athlete on the 10%?
This is just a reconstructed ACL. This is a kind of ballpark overall average.
Oh, that's crazy.
Is that more so they are favoring the other one, that they're doing? They might know it physically, but mentally, inside, subconsciously, they're favoring it. Why would the other one be more susceptible?
A lot of it has to do, and they've done a lot of studies to determine, how do these guys land? What's their joint position? Do they cut or turn or twist differently than other people? Because there's, a person can make the same cut, the same twist, the same turn over and over and over again and never hurt it, and then suddenly, boom, it pops. And so they've looked into, how do they land? Where's their knee position? Do they kind of fall into a little bit of an internally rotated position when they're landing from leaping, or from when they go to plant their foot and cut? And a lot of it likely has to do with those factors, what's their anatomy, as opposed to just their risk of getting hit by someone. Because most of the time, an ACL injury is not a contact injury.
No.
It's usually
cutting.
You're running, you plant your foot, it stops, you come over the top and pop.
Where would you list this as a probable comeback? If you get hurt in mid-December with those two ligaments and you have the surgery, should that be a full calendar year until you come back in full contact?
No, I think it's a little less likely for him to hit every game. I think the likelihood is he'll find himself a little sore and maybe need some, maybe he'll play part of the game and need his backup to help him out on some of the games where they're doing real well. But I think it's realistic to predict he's right back there.
Whoa. That's ahead of reports. And that's probably the best thing for them, because they live and die through Carson Wentz. And if you, even though you're a defending champion, you still don't have the patience to just sit with a backup all year long. I mean, Nick Foles.
Well, and that backup
could
probably get you a lot on the trade market. He won a Super Bowl. So
that's right.
I mean, there's no way if Wentz had been healthy the whole year and won the Super Bowl himself, they're probably to move Foles. They would have already moved him and gotten assets back for him. But I mean, they're in a good position. They have a guy who won him a Super Bowl, and then now they can, I guess, take a look at the knee and not rush it and be careful with him, because obviously the guy who you have now can win big games. He beat Brady in the Super Bowl.
Dr. Caleb Pinninger here with us, sports injury expert of Southern Nevada. He's with Crivetti Orthopedics. Go online, CrivettiOrtho.com, and learn a lot more, because you will actually go and hear and read testimonials from their actual clients. They come in every day of how much Crivetti Orthopedics go and help people on their everyday use, not just athletes, but everyone is able to go online to CrivettiOrtho.com and read how they can go and affect your life in a very, and really just not in an invasive manner, but in so many different ways.
At this point, I think I should give you that shot in the neck so you can write one of those testimonials for Crivetti Ortho.
I got one more question.
How great the doctor was today in bringing this enormous needle that we need jammed into you.
You know what we should
do? You performed well, even though you had to look at this the whole time.
I'm trying to forget about it, really. And I'm starting to think, like, you know, we should probably do this on Facebook Live. Like, when we go to commercial, we'll keep Facebook Live rolling, and then I get the shot.
Okay.
In the eye.
Yes, in the eye.
In the eye.
You only need one eye to run this show.
I could be blind. I could do this. I just can't do it deaf. Crivetti Orthopedics has come on here before, and you talked the last time about how important it is for parents to make sure that their kids, when they go through summer, not to be involved with too many sports, because mm-hmm. there is many ways that they can way overexert themselves. And at the time, you're starting to think, like, you know, as a parent, all right, my kids from like 9 to 15, their bones are made of rubber. They can do whatever they want. Let's just get them into sports and keep them there. That's very, very bad. What else do you start to look out for in the mid-summer months, like right now, when you have young student-athletes getting ready for two-a-days, for example? Mm-hmm. What are the things you'd like to watch out for?
Hey, I of course, when it's so hot outside, you got to watch these kids for dehydration. A funny story, I'm at the park with my kids the other day, and I show up to the skate park. My son's sitting against the ramp, and he's like, "I'm just tired." And I'm like, "No, you're not tired. You actually need a drink of water, and we need to get you out of the sun." Because,
good man.
You know, these kids, they just want to play and play and play, and they're not thinking about, wow, you know, I was thirsty, now I'm not thirsty. I was sweating, and now I'm not sweating. They're not looking for signs of heat exhaustion or heat stroke. Like, those are scary things, and yeah. It's hot here. So you got to watch your kids for that. But more importantly, it's summertime. Put them in something new. Let these kids try an archery class for a couple weeks, or let them try a diving course. You know,
yeah, like, it's a good idea.
Put them in something totally random. Let them have fun. Get them out of their routine sport to rest their body. These guys, they need rest. They need some cross training. They do not. Anytime you put a kid in a single sport specialization for repeated seasons, you're setting them up to hurt themselves. You know, you're going to put them in something that's going to entertain them. It's going to be fun. It's going to protect them. They really ought to try it. The summertime's a great time to do that. Take a season off. Let your kids rest. Take the ball out of their hand. If it's a pitcher year-round, give them a couple months off. He needs it.
That's the best advice you could probably give anybody right now.
Absolutely.
Because diversification is really important, because the routination of your core sports, it takes over your life psychologically and physically. But at the same time, you're like, those muscles that you constantly pound on an everyday basis, that has to rest.
It does. It absolutely does. And you won't regret it until, you know, people think that they're invincible until suddenly they're not. And when they're not, sometimes it's bad. And so don't put yourself in that situation. Take some time to try something new. Enjoy the summer.
Boy, that's a big needle.
God, that's a humongous needle.
It's
starting to glisten in the sunlight.
I know you were getting that. Yeah. That's huge.
Get a spotlight on it.
That's a huge
Where's the
needle.
Music?
I know. It's
like
music
in there. Weird, like, scary music.
Let's take a break. My leg's starting to throb. It needs it. Just take it and just jam it right in there.
You know right now I'm going to have to go and lift you up out of that chair. There's no way you're standing up here on your own and looking at that needle. You have no chance.
I know. Jared helped me to the bathroom last time, and he wanted out. He's like, I just saw signs.
Jared's like, this job's not worth what they're having me do recently.
Dr. Caleb Pinninger, thank you again for coming in.
Thank you, brother.
Appreciate your time.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Great
to be here.
Go online to CrivettiOrtho.com to learn more information, as well as learn about the testimonials and all the many procedures and strategies they do for the everyday person as well as the athlete. When we come back, we'll be joined by Scott Bylow, College Football and More, here on ESPN Las Vegas.